everyone. It's time to eat, drink, and be merry with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy.
Hey, everybody, it is time for Wine Time with Peggy. It is the first Wednesday of the month. And, you know, we're excited because the first Wednesday of the month, not only is Peggy on the show, but it is our new day of where we celebrate gardens, farms, and vineyards. And of course, we wanted to do it on the day where it's Wine Time with Peggy. And Peggy Fiandaca and her husband, Kurt, own and run LDV Winery in Arizona. Their tasting room is up in Scottsdale. You know, it's a big art destination in the Southwest. And then the actual vineyard is located at the base of the Chiricahua foothills, which is in Southeast Arizona. So southeast of Tucson, and it's a beautiful destination. So everyone go to their website, ldvwinery.com. It's in the show notes as well, because today's a big day. This month, LDV Winery is celebrating 15 years. So welcome back, Peggy. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, 15 years of winemaking. Crazy adventure we're on.
Well, you know, it's almost
years
week
of
16.
Tasting.
Well, yeah, when did the tasting, what year did the tasting begin? Because you've got to go for the vineyards and actually grow the grapes.
Well, we got grapes and we made wine our second year because we purchased grapes early that very first year to try it because we had never made even a kit wine. So we had to figure out how to make wine a little bit before we had our grapes. And, but we've had our tasting room now for, I want to say we opened our tasting room. Let's see, when did we do that? In 2015. So, that was one of our lessons learned. Took too long to open up a tasting room.
And everyone, we've got an article up on our site, where Peggy focuses on lessons learned over 15 years. And that was one of them, is have a tasting room. Yeah. So people can understand it. And what do you think over the 15 years in the Arizona wine as a whole? Is there, someone's looking at opening a winery in Arizona, what would you say to them about the actual Arizona wine scene?
Well, it is growing. Tremendously. As I think I've said in the past, we were like license number in the teens. So I think 17, 18, something like that in the state of Arizona when we started. But now there's close to 120 licenses in the state of Arizona. So just in that 15, 17 year period, the industry has taken off because people have found that we can grow incredible grapes. High quality grapes. Of course, we have the tourism, which is wonderful for selling wine and just a perfect place to grow grapes.
Nice. How hard is it to actually, because you're at the whims of nature, which is, we're going to get your, the vineyard report, which really is about harvest report this time of year, being September. But, when it comes to being profitable as a company, even if I look at our industry, the publishing world has changed dramatically since we've been doing it for 26 years this year. And it's like what we started with and what we are now are like 10 different things. And you know what I mean? Yeah. So in the wine and nature, and then just even, it's a good thing that Arizona grew, right? If it didn't grow, that would have been a bummer.
Right. Well, it's very challenging to grow grapes in the desert, where we're at. Of course, we're at 5,000 foot elevation, so we're much cooler. So it's not necessarily the heat, but it's what happens during the growing season in Arizona and our regions is the monsoons. So we have to deal with, rain in the growing season, which causes, you got to watch for mildew and mold and all that kind of stuff, and could get a hailstorm that could devastate your crops. So as I've mentioned, we were hit early. We had a late frost, so early in the growing season, that we're seeing that our yield is down because of that. We have a nice quality of the grapes are incredible, but the yield is a little bit down for us because of that weather.
Yeah, that's sad though. I mean, if you get quality grapes, so that's really good. That's like a good and the bad at once, right? And so then that's the time when you open a bottle of wine and go, well, cheers to this and boo on that, you know?
Right.
But I mean, quality is, it isn't that important, like for you guys when you started the winery to actually grow your own grapes instead of having somebody, so like you're doing the whole process.
Absolutely. I mean, we said, if we're going to go into this crazy adventure, we want to do it the way we've admired other wineries, how they establish their estate and control every step of the process. And that was what we wanted to do. So we wanted to choose our grape stock, put our vines, take care of our vines, grow as sustainably as we possibly can, take care of our soils, and because we believe our gold is in the vineyard. And so our goal is to, once we harvest those grapes, get them into the winery, is to not mess them up, you know, because we have quality grapes. So we want to do as little manipulation to them as possible once we get into the winery.
Does wind affect them at all, like when they're growing?
Yeah, that's the other thing that we have in southeastern Arizona is tremendous winds off that mountain, 10,000 foot elevation. So that makes it very challenging to have that wind, because you can get shattered to the vines. And actually, it was so heavy, the winds were a few years ago, it knocked down a whole row of Syrah that was on, you know, it was first hit
by
the wind. So it can be pretty powerful. I mean, that was steel trellising and everything else. It knocked down.
Wow.
Yeah.
And one thing that's interesting too is like you're not far, your tasting room's not far from the vineyard, right? So when I think about like the moving of grapes and making the wine, is it different than if someone's trucking in a bunch of grapes? Can that ruin the grapes?
Not necessarily ruin the grapes. It would make me very nervous transporting, you know, again, my gold, which are the harvested grapes or the vines, having to travel. But some wineries in Arizona, they have to haul their grapes, you know, 3.5-4 hours to their winery.
Wow.
And it's critical that you transport them and keep them cold or chilled in some way, along the way. And hopefully you don't get in traffic and get caught on the side of the road or get in an accident. I can't even imagine.
I remember just when we had print magazines hauling like our first batch of magazines and everything's going into newspapers and stuff, but there was our side of it and then waiting for the trucks and hoping everything was right. And then saying, you know, we did our press check and then you think everything's going to look, but we did too much of a run. So whenever they would arrive, we'd have to go like, now you need to turn them, send them back. And the delivery thing, I just worry about like the, I mean, what happens?
So much easier online.
but with your transporting thing, like you're saying, I mean, what happens if it suddenly didn't refrigerate anymore? And that would be your gold down the drain. And that's like a whole year's work.
Or the truck breaks down and you're on the side of the road and I'm sure they're transporting before dawn, would be the key, you know, harvested and transported before the heat of the day. And, you know, what if the truck breaks down and you have to sit on the side of the road for a while? I don't know. It's luckily that's not us. That's not what we have to do. We have a full winery right on site. So as soon as the grapes get harvested, we, you know, start the process, on the crush pad. So
that's a lot better.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She wants control. She wants control of her gold. That's it.
Absolutely.
Control the gold.
Yep. I want to either blame my husband, Kurt, or myself for any problems. No one else.
See, that's it. But somehow you brought his name up first. Well done. But one thing too, with this, you know, you're doing your own grapes and you're going out in the desert and doing this where a lot of people would say, why Arizona, right? You could go to Napa, you could go to all these places. So you have a little bit more of an adventure and a challenge, but then the importance of actual Arizona, you know, winemakers and grape growers, all the viticulturists getting together. Is it important to work together? I can only imagine it should be the most important thing. Do you help each other? Like, I need a tractor quick. Or do you guys help each other? And I mean, as a marketing, it's important, right? For Arizona to stand together to make a destination for wines. Right. We talked about that last time, but in regards to helping each other as winemakers and that kind of thing, is that important?
Absolutely. It's a small industry, in comparatively to others. So we know everyone, you know, I know everyone mm-hmm. in the state that's pretty much that's making wine and have their phone number in my phone. So I can mm-hmm. call them. We share, some wineries share equipment. Some obviously we share the same picking crews. And that's critical to coordinate. We also have wineries that aren't growing grapes and don't have a winery. So they have collaborative arrangements with other wineries that make their wine for them. So it is really close. We had one of the winemakers pass away a few years ago, and his wife really wasn't involved in the process, and it was right during harvest, and everyone stepped in to help her get through it, you know, and try to figure out the business and that type of thing. So, no, I can tell all kinds of stories of that kind of, you know, a tractor is broken and how can I get there? We had the bottler broken a while ago.
Oh, I remember. Mm-hmm.
And I had several other wineries saying, we're not bottling, we can ship. We can truck our bottler over to your place if you need it. You just let us know. So we had people step up almost immediately to help us out. And
that's a fun part.
Yeah, that's the beauty of a small industry that we share, and we know each other's strengths. And so when someone wants a Cabernet, which is what I we don't grow or make Cabernet, so I know where to send them, or if someone wants a sweeter wine that, because our wines are zero residual sugar, I know where to send them to get a nice wine. So, it's important.
I think it's great because, you know, just like, even like you're saying, helping with a tractor and things like that, it's all together. I mean, if there's a pest, isn't that important that you're all sharing information too? Like that kind of thing.
Oh my gosh. And we are really close with the University of Arizona, cooperative, and they have a scientist that helps support the industry, and we share information through a database. And then you have the College of the Southwest Wine Center up in Yavapai College, and that's an important resource for us, for the industry. So the Arizona Wine Growers Association also helps. We're all members of that, and helps ensure that information about legislation or federal or state are communicated so we can take a stand or lobby or that type of thing too. So
remember back about the glassy wing sharpshooter drama that some of the wineries had to put up with a couple of years
California,
back
ago. Temecula California area, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Right. It's bad. And even in the Northwest, they had some issues with it, I think, this year. And California has some issues this year also. It's not something that I believe is an issue here in Arizona. We have not seen it. But
good.
Correct what's happening in California, because a lot of our rootstock comes from California nurseries. So it's very important that our rootstock that comes is clean and doesn't carry any of those pests to Arizona.
That's when we go through those agricultural checkpoints, you're on board with those then, right? Don't sneak the plants over the border.
Absolutely. It's amazing what sneaks over.
I've never done that before in my life. Actually, no, we took a rose. We were, it was at the beginning of our tour. And we knew we were getting rid of everything. And we took some of our potted plants to a friend in California. And the lady says, do you have any plants? And there's a rose tree right in the window. And I'm just like, no. And she just waved me through. And I was like, I was actually joking as a joke. Cause like you could see all these plants and she waved me through and I was like, oh, I'll screw it. We're going. But cause I was just like, oh, no, funny. Like what a joke. Like sarcastic.
That you was could so see odd.
The whole back seat. There was just all these plants, you know, daylilies, roses, you name it. So, but anyway, I won't do that again, Peggy. Now that I know, don't do it. But don't I took it from it. Arizona to California, right?
Okay.
Normally everybody's coming from California to Arizona.
Yeah. Awesome.
So I took it the other way around. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting how everyone needs to work together. What do you see for LDV Winery right now in regards to moving forward? Because there's that time, that point of being successful in a business, do you expand? Do you stay where you are and maybe expand a little bit over here? You know, that balance.
It is a balance. You know, we have room to expand. So I think over the near term, probably next year, you know, we will be planting additional vines, primarily to, you know, over time, you have vines that don't survive. You know, for a variety of reasons. And so they're called skips. So you might have a row with skips of vines that have died, and we'll go in and count those all up and replace those skips. And we have quite a few because we haven't done that in many years. So we'll definitely be doing that. Expansion is always important for us to consider going forward. You know, we're in for the long haul, so we're going to be around for a while. But we have quite a bit of wine so I think part of our future looks at expanding markets, expanding customer base, and getting out to more people to know who we are and to enjoy our wine. And then, you know, we'll be producing more. Right now we're about 3,000 cases. I see us potentially producing more cases per year and maybe introduce another variety. You know, right now we only have the four varieties, Vignier, Grenache, Syrah, and Petit Syrah. Maybe we introduce Mourvèd or another white variety.
No, I'm going on I say Mourvèdre, and I can't pronounce anything, but I'll go with the Mourvèd because, like, please, I beg of you, if you do this, your Petit Syrahs are so amazing that in the Syrah, so I know, like, that you just, that would be like the most perfect. Oh my God, that would be so beautiful. I'm just saying, that's just me, you know, I'm putting my vote in while I can. I'm in. That's like, you know, that is like, just talk about liquid gold like that. I don't care about it's red and everything, but I'm, you know, that's amazing stuff. Now
it's a beautiful color.
It is
gorgeous. It is the best color. It is delicious. And I know that if you guys are doing it, it's going to be off the charts.
It's
amazing.
Be very good.
And we love a GSM, which is Grenache, Syrah, and Mourvèd. And so we've always missed the Mourvèdre as our GSM. So it'll allow us to really make a traditional Rhone blend, which would be fun.
I love that. The one thing I wanted to say too, would you expand into doing more restaurants, that kind of thing? Or are you going to still stay primarily the tasting room and wine club?
You know, the restaurants, yes, we'll always continue to try to get in more restaurants. What that does for us is it's exposure and pure marketing, basically, because of the tourism and, of course, around Scottsdale, and we get high-end travelers to the Scottsdale area. So restaurants will help in that capacity. But more growing our wine club, growing our reach across the country with wine club members, I think is always something that we strive to do. So
awesome. Yeah. I love this. So, okay. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Grenache, and I know that we need to bring up Grenache I know you want to talk about fermentation, and that's the term of the day, but International Grenache Day is September 15th. So what should people know? Number one, your Grenache is delicious. So everyone should know, like, they need to go buy it now. And we're getting into cooler temperatures. So everyone, just saying, shipping will start soon, right? But Grenache is a beautiful grape. It's a delicious wine. So tell us a little bit more of what people can. It can pair with so much, actually, now that I think of it.
It is such a versatile grape, and it really makes a wide variety of wines. And mostly it's a blending grape. So people might not know Grenache, but they probably had it in a blend of their favorite wine. It is one of the most widely planted grapes in the world. So it's very popular. It does really well in the desert. We call it the Pinot Noir of the desert. It just really grows beautifully in Arizona and at LDV. I think it's one of the most beautiful grapes when it goes through veraison, when the colors start changing. Mm-hmm. A cluster of Grenache could be about this big, and it just has pinks and a little yellow and different shades of purple on it. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous grape. And so we just harvested partial of our Grenache crop to make rosé. We make a beautiful rosé of Grenache, and we just, it's coming along really nicely. So we'll
have
a wonderful 2023 Grenache of rosé, rosé of Grenache. Yeah.
So when would that be ready?
That probably won't be on the market until 2025 late.
I mean, don't you want it to be ready like now?
Well, we have a wonderful rosé of Grenache on the market now that you can buy while you're waiting for the 2023. But it's fun because we haven't had one from the 2020 vintage on or 20. Mm. Yeah. So we're able to do it this year. And we're excited about
it. Very cool.
And you know, what's great about Grenache, it's so food friendly. So anything that you would pair with a Pinot Noir, you can choose a Grenache. And Grenache is made from, you know, California, the Northwest, obviously the Rhone Valley of France. It's Ganacha in Spain, you know. So get out and try a variety of different Grenaches. It's going to taste different depending on what region it comes from, but it'll fall in the medium flavor profile. Grenache will. It's not heavy tannin, but it's a fun wine.
You know, you said that we have a bottle of Ganacha right here, and I was looking at it and I didn't know what it was. Like I just, I'm like, what is that? And now I'm wondering. Now I'm going to go order some pizza. What should I have on the pizza to go with the Ganacha?
Oh yeah, that's the perfect wine. Mushrooms. Anything if you like mushrooms.
Cool.
Definitely, and that's why
September is Mushroom Month.
The recipe I did of stuffed mushrooms because it goes beautifully with Grenache, and it kind of reminds me of fall coming. And it's a robust dish, and you can make it gluten free. It's definitely vegan, so it's just a fun recipe, so hopefully people will grab that.
Nice.
You know, stuffed mushrooms are so good to do for entertaining. You know what I mean? They're like one of those, ooh, look what you did, and they're not that hard to do. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah.
There's so much with them. I mean, they're really versatile.
And my recipe uses two kinds of wine. So it uses our Viognier that I actually use in the stuffing portion of it. And I saute the mushroom caps in a medium-bodied red. So the Grenache would be a perfect wine to saute the caps in. Or I think on the recipe I call for my R.E.D. One of the events this month, I'm doing a food and wine pairing demonstration. And the stuffed mushrooms are on my demonstration that I'll teach people how to make them.
You're doing a lot of events this month. Yeah, I know.
I'm going to try that.
I'm going to do it now. I'm hungry. As soon as I saw the recipe, I'm like, Peggy, how cruel. What are you doing sending this? I'm like, I want it. And everyone, the recipe again is linked in the show notes, but I'm telling you, I think September is a good month with all of this. Now, fermentation, you know, because I think that's a perfect wine term for this month, because fermentation goes with wine, obviously, but it's also, when I look at mushrooms, are part of that fermenting process. And, you know, if you go in the, where, you know, I've been hiking around in the Appalachian woods, and I'm going to have to send you a link to my mushroom video. Seriously. Wow. Because I got addicted to looking at mushrooms, living off of things that were basically mulching and fermenting. And I didn't pick them or do anything with them, just so you know, everybody. I stayed sober and was just fine. But I didn't see anything weird in the forest. But I'm amazed by mushrooms. But so fermentation, that kind of goes with, you know, with what mushrooms do.
Right. And in winemaking, of course, what fermentation means is it's really basically taking, converting the grapes into alcohol, right? Mm. And so when we've harvested our Viognier, which is our white grape, we've already harvested that. And when we make white wine, we press it immediately. And then we add yeast to the juice to start that fermentation process. Mm. But red wine, what we do, like we've just harvested all of our Syrah, and we harvested, I said, a portion of the Grenache. But when that gets harvested, the grapes come in, we destem them, and then we put the skins, the juice, and whatever else might be in there, we put it into the fermentation vats, and then we add yeast to them and start the fermentation process. And just like if you've ever made bread and or anything you ferment, you know that it's actively working when little bubbles start coming to the top of the surface, right? Just like in bread. And that's what we're looking for in the fermentation vats. But also what's happening in fermentation is that it creates this cap on the top, which is it hardens the cap. And what we have to do is go in 3 times a day and break that up or stir that up so that you're making sure that all of the grapes are being in contact with the fermentation process. So, that fermentation process lasts between 5 to 21 days. And, and we test it and take the temperature of it on a daily basis to track it, to see how it's doing. And once the fermentation stops, then we're able to press the red wine grapes. So that's when we take it off the skins and just have the juice and put the juice in their vessel that they're going to live in for a while.
So this is crazy. This is like mad science. So do you have all those little test tubes and all that stuff down at when we come see you at the winery, this is the best science lesson, right? Is going into a winery, because it's exciting. I mean, did you ever think this was going to be your life, is winemaking and playing, you know, science and all of that?
No, I slept through chemistry. So this is all news to me, you know, how this all works. And of course, being a big city girl, being on a farm, that's never been in my, thought process before. But you know, that's the beauty of life, and if you embrace what comes and don't shy away from new adventures, and just because we never made wine before doesn't mean we can't, you know. That, we're smart people.
Dude, you guys are rocking it now. Now does Kurt have a farm background?
No, neither one of us.
Wow. Funny.
We went in this, like I've always said, it was a midlife crisis. It was something,
Green acres.
Right.
Well, you guys did city planning, and that has got to be one of the most stressful
things,
because you're also having to deal with a community and all the boards and all of that stuff that I can't, you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. I'm not good.
Thinking so far ahead.
I mean, you think about the patience you had to do as a, in the planning of for communities and cities. That's patience. That's like people patience. Now you have to have patience on all kinds of things. But then waiting for the wine, come on. So there's two kinds of patience, which
there is. Absolutely. And, I am more patient than Kurt is. He's had to learn patience because he is the farmer and he is the, the winemaker. He's dealing with it on a daily basis. We're both control freaks. So Mother Nature and having to pretend like we have control over everything has been difficult for us because we have no control over most things. And so that's been challenging. But we still pretend like we control everything.
But that's a good thing in life. You know, that's the thing about doing new adventures is that you grow as a human being.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's good to challenge and test. What was it like when you both decided, okay, we're buying this plot of land and doing this? Because were there vines there before that you took over, or you had a big plot of dirt and
we
went, let's do this?
That is exactly right. I mean, once we got the property, actually, after negotiating and all the research and things like that, we sat down and go over a glass of wine, of course, or a bottle.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Several, I don't know. I can't remember. But it's like, oh, my goodness, what did we do? We are, you know, we were close to just retiring and playing golf every day to, oh, my goodness, now we have to figure out how to grow grapes and make wine. And we're never going to have money again, and we're never going to have time again. So we questioned our sanity at that time. Was this the right decision? And we still do. Every year we sit down and think about our planning and what we've done well and what we need to change in the future. And we question, you know, are we still passionate about this? And
That's
so
crucial.
Yeah, I think it is. When you work this hard and you want to be passionate about what you do in life, I think. And we want to surround ourselves with people that are passionate. I don't care if you're passionate about honeybees or plants, a chocolate. I don't care what it is you're passionate about, but if you're passionate, you can hang with us. If you have no, you can't tell me within 5 minutes what you're passionate about, I don't want to spend time with you. So
yeah,
that's a life lesson for knowing Peggy. But I agree with you because
it's true.
I can't stand that. It's almost a very negative thing. And for us, like we are like, oh, we're going to do this. And I remember when we started the magazine, we actually did a few coloring books as kind of a market research thing, coloring book for kids, but it showed regional stuff in San Diego.
That.
And we were just kind of seeing, and I remember this lady, you know, I was going to visit her bureaus and talking to people what we wanted to do for North San Diego as our beginning. And one of these like, well, there's so many magazines, we really don't need one. I went, that's it, we're doing it. I'm running home to Nancy. I'm like we just got told we shouldn't do it. She's like, screw them, we're doing it.
But there's a difference. There's magazines and there's magazines.
So it's really it's an interesting thing and we're always a believer in biting off more than you can chew, and then at the same time boxing yourself into it to keep yourself going, because if you don't kind of, you have to hold your feet to the fire. More nobody else can do it but you, and then you have commitments. And if, you know, you always honor your commitments, like you have a wine club, like if you know, when you were talking about the lady losing her husband, like there's a commitment to the wine club that has to be fulfilled, right? That's part of it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, owning your own business, whatever it is, being the copy store, being a publisher, being a winemaker, it takes a certain kind of person. Someone that is really dedicated and hardworking and self-motivated, because no one else is going to do it for you. And you're going to have to get up every day and do the hard work that it takes to be successful over time. And I always say, you know, when people want to get in the wine business, I suggest that they don't, because most people would not be successful in it. And they see the glamour part of it. They see the sitting around, you know, having a winemaker dinner and drinking wine with great people, but they don't see, you know, getting up at 4 a.m. To check on vines or to do punch downs, or when our second year we had all of our, I think it was like 50% of our crop destroyed by hail. You know,
oh, man.
They don't see any of those kind of things.
The blood, sweat, and tears.
The blood, sweat, and tears. So it's like, I always say, it's like when people say, I want to buy a boat. And someone goes, no, don't buy that boat. Know someone that owns a boat. Same thing with the winery. Now, don't get in the wine business, but get close to your winemaker or your favorite grape grower and volunteer and immerse yourself in what they do. And unless you have really deep financial pockets and you are a glutton for hard work, then maybe you want this business.
Yeah, I understand. I know. It's like, hey, this is the life. You're leading the life. I'm like, I am, but... understand, you know, and I think that I want people to understand so much, like when you do enjoy a bottle of wine, how much blood, sweat, and tears go into it, because this is not an overnight thing. And I think breweries are in, high fashion right now, right? And they have a quicker turnaround.
They do.
But when you look at, and it's a craft, and I totally respect it, and I love a good beer. But wine, I really think, is important, and spirits, how the process takes, you know, that it is agriculture. There's so many people involved, you know, it's just, there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in each bottle of wine.
Right. It is. It really is. And, you know, not everyone goes into the wine business like we did, starting with raw land and, you know, creating an estate. And so it's a lot. If you want to get in the wine business and you want to be able to generate some revenues quicker, then you purchase grapes. Maybe you don't have grapes in the ground. You have a contract with a vineyard that you're going to buy grapes from them on an annual basis. And maybe you don't even have a winery. You have a contract with another winery to make wine to your specification. And so you can generate revenues a lot quicker than we did by, you know, the way we started. So there's a lot of different.
What about people, the private labeling too? That's also something, right? Like a resort will say, oh, I've got my own wine. Like, you know, so I don't know about, we had the Biltmore wine here, Biltmore Estate wine here in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah, they purchase grapes, I believe. Okay. Yeah. So there's a lot of business models, just like probably in any business that you could. We chose to choose the hardest and most expensive model.
Well, and listen, one day Nancy and I could have the big blend wine. I mean, is that not the perfect name
you
for
could. A, it is
a big the big red wine. The big the big red. We'd have to have the big red blend,
big like, red blend.
Yeah. When you come out, we'll have to, over some wine, we'll have to talk about it.
let's make a blend. Yeah. I love it. Cool. You do classes on that, don't you?
We do actually this month. Every Sunday in September, we're having different kind of celebratory classes. The second Sunday in September is on blending. And so Kurt will come up and we'll teach them about how to blend and what our philosophy towards blending is all about. So, yeah.
Well, I think that's what's going to happen when we come to visit you. I think we want a blending class. I think it makes perfect sense. It is awesome. Well, congratulations. Please give our congrats to Kurt as well and everybody working at LDV Winery. Everyone, LDVWinery.com is the website. They're on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those places. I don't know if you're on Threads yet. You know, you can hang by a vine. Yeah, come on. It's like... But they should have called it. Well, there was Vine, Twitter. Well, X. I don't know what to call it. Whatever.
Right.
I don't know what to say. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us again, everyone. Peggy is here every first Wednesday. It's always a joy and always something interesting and new to learn. So thank you so much, Peggy.
Thank you. Great to see you guys. Bye bye.